Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Lakers Collective. Happy to have you all here. Everybody, do me a favor real quick before we even get into the show. Double check right now. Check and see if you're subscribed. If you're not, hit that subscribe button. If you are subscribed, give us that thumbs up. Let's get this video out to as many people as we can. He's Jovan Buha. I'm Trevor Lane. Jovan, just the two of us holding it down today as Pete is still working through his move.
We wish Pete the best. Hopefully he'll be on later in the week. I was about to give you a Just the Two of Us jingle, but I decided not to. I'm doing it in my head right now.
In your head, right? It still counts. It still counts. Actually, I have no idea what kind of a singer you are or are not. But if it was me, I would just be inflicting pain upon our audience. Let's put it that way.
I think I could sing a little bit. I got some range.
All right. All right.
I was going to say
could be a mid-August show. Like when we get a couple more weeks in, that's where we're going to be at in NBA August. We're going to get to Jovan singing on our show. But happy to have everybody here. A lot of stuff that we will get into. We're going to spend most of our time going back and forth with you guys in the chat. So if you guys want to submit any questions, any comments, any of that kind of stuff that you want us to talk about, we'll certainly get into it. I guess where we can start with all of this is that right now the Lakers roster is still not complete. We know there's a move that's going to have to be made, and at least one, in terms of getting their roster down to 15 roster spots. Nothing that's pressing or that they have to do immediately here. But Jovan, I've settled at a point where I'm saying, I know we're all wanting to see the Lakers land a wing. We're all wanting to see a backup big or other kind of tweaks and things being made. This time of year is when things start to slow down around the league. My hope is just by the time we get to training camp, this roster is settled. Though, Jovan, I've had a lot of people tell me, no, it needs to be settled before Luka brings the team to Slovenia. Do you think that creates any kind of de facto deadline for the Lakers to make any kind of move, or is that overthinking things?
I think that's overthinking things. I would say it's a nice to have, but it's not a must have, right? Like if you have this awesome opportunity post Slovenia, you're not going to be like, well, that player wasn't there at the mini camp, so we can't add this player to the roster, right? Like that's not how this works. So I think it would be great to have the roster set going into that camp and to fully have the 15 guys together, or you know, Cameron Carr isn't going to be able to make it. But aside from Cameron Carr, due to his rookie duties, everyone else being there and getting those reps together and bonding on and off the court, that would be great. But if that's not how it plays out and Jonathan Kuminga or PJ Washington or whoever potentially gets traded or you know acquired by the Lakers later in the summer, so be it, right? Like I think it's, yeah, so I don't think it's this black and white type situation where if they don't get the player by then, they can't add them after. Again, it's a nice to have, but I don't think it's a must have.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think it's this drop dead date or anything like that. It would be ideal, certainly, for them to figure out who that player or players are going to be. But if it's not, it doesn't happen by the time they go to Slovenia, that's fine. By the way, I feel bad for Cameron Carr. He's got to go to rookie orientation and instead is not able to get out of it. This is, you know, you've got a project due at school and your family's going on vacation and you have to stay behind to work on the school project. I feel bad for the rookie. And that's bonding time that he's not going to get. In the grand scheme of things, does it matter that much? Probably not. But still, he's got to be frustrated as hell that literally everyone else is going except for him.
Just let him zoom in. What's the big deal here? Like, I guess the one thing for him that's a benefit is he gets to stave off his rookie duties with the team for a little bit, right? With the,
that's true.
You know, whatever the rookie hazing will be and carrying everyone's towels and bags and stuff like that. But I think it sucks for him that he's not going to be there. And I think there should be some leniency in this case, but clearly there's not going to be.
Yeah. Yeah, it's unfortunate that that's where the situation is at. Yeah, you'd think, can they let him do it as a remote course or something? Like, can he do a little distance education or something from Slovenia, do that with the NBA? But unfortunately, he's going to have to miss this. All right, let's get into some of the chat questions, comments, things like that. I'm sure we'll get into, oh yeah, I'm already seeing a little bit on Klay Thompson. We'll talk about that. We did get a silver star coming in, one of these jewel things. I'm still figuring out what exactly these things
look. I like jewels, so I will take the jewels. I appreciate
we'll take it. It's a good thing. That's what we know. It's a good thing. Chris said Tim had a video talking about top five players and their best hypothetical partners outside the top five. He paired AD with Luka. How do you think Walker could replicate that? You know, it's funny. Obviously, they weren't, this wasn't the negotiation, but had the Lakers been able to send LeBron in the Luka trade, it actually would have been a better basketball fit with AD and Luka. But of course, the health issues with AD and all of that being what they were. Walker Kessler obviously does not have the offensive game that Anthony Davis does, nor is he as versatile of a defensive player, even if he can be just as good, especially this version of Anthony Davis, as a rim protector. But I think there's a lot more question marks about his offensive game. I mean, look at what Walker Kessler can do. Is there a world where 25-year-old Walker Kessler is able to replicate what a early, almost getting into mid-30s Anthony Davis can potentially produce? Or are we setting that bar too high for Kessler?
So we're saying the current version of AD?
Current version of AD. That's what I'm... We're not talking prime AD. That yeah. Bar is too high.
I mean, I still think AD, one, he's been healthy the last couple of years, has been at a high level. Like, I even think back to the 2024-25 season when he was traded to Dallas. That first part of that season before he got injured, he was still, I felt, in that top 10 conversation. And even his glimpses in Dallas, that I think about that first game he played against the Rockets and how great he looked. So I want to give AD a level of respect here that I think Walker Kessler, this version of Kessler compared to this version of AD, is probably a better rim protector, but AD still has that versatility edge on him. And we haven't seen what the current version of AD looks like from a mobility standpoint. So maybe like he could just be cooked in terms of his lateral quickness and his ability to move. But if we're assuming we're giving him the benefit of the doubt here and the respect that AD deserves, like there are some similarities in the sense of I think Kessler can do similar things to what AD can do. But ultimately, AD, the post game, the face up game, the versatility on both sides of the ball, I think there's some notable differences there. But what Kessler can do that I think would be an interesting addition into the pick and roll game is the possibility of him picking and popping and potentially doing that at a higher level than AD. And now AD had his stretches of his career where he shot the three well, stretches where he didn't. But in the very, very, very small sample size we saw with Walker Kessler, 6 threes in 5 games, his shot looked really good. And there was nothing within that that seemed unsustainable. It wasn't like he was taking these mega contested threes. It was basically like just spotting up on the weak side or pick and pop. The big man doesn't respect his shot. The big man's in drop. Okay, we're going to make you pay. And it's an above the break three. I think that's sustainable. So I want to have respect for AD in this comparison, but I think Walker can do similar things to AD. And there's the basic rim running, finishing at the rim, being a presence in the paint on both sides, elite rebounder, elite interior defender, rim protector. I just think AD overall is a more versatile and skilled player.
Yeah, I agree. AD certainly in the versatility call. I'll tell you what, I think there's, when we look at Walker Kessler, Anthony Davis, we're talking about two different levels of players. Anthony Davis is, and maybe even two tiers up above what Walker Kessler is and has been so far in the NBA. But there is a world where Kessler, at the current version of him, is getting close to current AD in production when AD is on the floor. And of course, Kessler has his own injury issues. But I'll tell you what, there are two things, I think, specifically that are going to directly affect the ceiling of Walker Kessler, because we already know what he is defensively. We know what he is, a rebounder. We know what he is, a shot blocker. I'm confident with all those things, the motor, all of that. I know what we're getting out of him. The two big unknowns for Walker Kessler, it's the three-point shooting, which you just mentioned, Jovan. That's going to be critical. Can he be a floor spacing big or not? Not that he's going to do it all the time. There's going to be opportunities to roll to the basket as well. But is that a tool in the toolbox or not? That is one of the big questions. And then as a passer, the Utah Jazz last season, in a limited sample size, used him as an offensive hub. And there were moments where it looked really, really good when they had cutters off of him, some of the schemes they were running. I'm curious to see if the Lakers can incorporate some of that. While his assists did almost double, his turnovers more than doubled last season for the Utah Jazz using him in that role. So to me, it's those two things that are going to determine what his offensive ceiling and his ultimate ceiling as a player I think really will be. It's, is the three ball for real? And then number two, what is the passing level for him? Is that going to continue to grow? It continue to develop? Can he keep the turnovers down? And when the situation calls for it, be somebody that you can have as an offensive hub as well. I think those two things are going to be critical for where we ultimately land with Walker Kessler this season and moving forward.
Is there a version of Walker Kessler that's like a hybrid Rudy Gobert, Brooke Lopez? Because I think that's the best case scenario for him, right? Like you have the 80, 85% of what Rudy Gobert could do, but then you also have this Brooke Lopez element of Brooke Lopez being the ultimate 3-and-D guy, which allowed Giannis to play functionally at the five within the Milwaukee's offense. And then that also gives you this two big capability potentially with Kessler longer term, Lopez allowed you to play basically two fives from an offensive perspective. You could potentially get there with Kessler if he develops into that level of shooter. So I think that's like the upside with Kessler here is you have the Gobert Lopez type rim protector, defender. People forget Brooke Lopez finished, I believe, second in defensive player of the year 1 year. It was like a monster rim protector, shot blocker. But then offensively, can he be a better version of Gobert and then also eventually get to that level with Lopez in terms of the shooting or close to that level? I don't know. Like, Lopez was an awesome shooter and was great at deep threes, and that was a huge part of Milwaukee's success. I think that's like the vision here, I guess. Can he get to that level? And it remains to be seen.
I think where I would like to see him settle in terms of, and I do love that idea of being a hybrid Brooke Lopez slash Rudy Gobert, because defensively, I think Rudy Gobert is the most direct and certainly an exciting comp for Walker Kessler. But what I would like to see is him land somewhere between, in terms of shot volume from three, somewhere between Marc Gasol during his Lakers season and Brooke Lopez when he was at his peak, because there were some years there, and I just pulled it, where he shot, Brooke Lopez was shooting six threes per game. To the degree where it got to be a little bit too much to me, where I think it would take away from a little bit of Walker Kessler's rebounding prowess. Certainly Brooke Lopez not known as a high level rebounder. And then the flip side of that is Marc Gasol, who was actually a really good 3-point shooter, but just took it so infrequently the teams didn't really worry about him behind the arc. In fact, he only averaged two per game attempts per game for the Lakers. So somewhere in that range, if he takes three, four, somewhere between three
is a good number. Yeah.
Just so that he is a threat, the teams care about him out there and they know that if he's open, he will take the shot, but I don't want to take away too much from him as an offensive rebounder. And that was one thing that when I was digging into some of the film on Walker Kessler, I thought was really interesting was when teams would ignore him behind the corner three, he not only became an option as a shooter, but when the shot did go up, he was actually really, really effective as a corner crasher, flying in for offensive rebounds as well. I don't want to completely pull him out of the paint, but if I'm JJ Redick, I'm trying to figure out a way to incorporate all of this. And I think having that kind of, shout out Rob Pelinka, that kind of optionality is going to be great for JJ this coming season, assuming that three ball is for real.
I guess we could even not, like, the hybrid Gobert-Lopez. We don't even have to Frankenstein it. We can just say, what if Rudy Gobert could shoot threes? That is maybe the better way to frame it. And if Rudy Gobert could shoot threes, that would be, think about how great Rudy Gobert has been throughout his career. Like, that's a pretty special player. So again, I don't know if he's going to get quite to the highs of Gobert as a defender, 4-time defensive player of the year. Like, he is in his own class as one of the greatest rim protectors and just interior defenders of all time. But if Kessler can get 85% there, 90% there defensively, and then I think he's already better offensively than Gobert, but if he can continue to refine his game and be that potential pick and pop threat, catch and shoot threat, but also be a bigger threat around the basket, like, that is a really good player.
I think the big difference is Gobert's got that 7'9" wingspan, which is absurd, but a 7'9" wingspan, whereas Kessler's coming in at like 7'5", which is still crazy. But I think there's a level there with Gobert that may be a little difficult to reach. But I'm excited.
I would say
what Walker Kessler could do.
Up to this point in his career, Kessler's averaged more blocks per game and more. Mm-hmm. You could break that down into like per possession per 36. Kessler has the edge, and he's allowed a lower field goal percentage at the rim than Gobert through Kessler's career up to this point. So he's on pace to like, you know, he's got to continue to improve. And there's definitely, I think, a couple more levels he can get to in terms of his defense, but he's there. Like he's in the conversation, in my opinion, clearly as like a top five rim protector in the league.
So when the Walker Kessler trade went down, I know we're talking a lot about Kessler here based off this question, but I want to pick your brain on this. When the Walker Kessler trade went down, there was a lot around the NBA, the reaction of, oh my God, the Lakers overpaid. What are they doing? Two pick swaps, and they gave him all this money and 4-year deal and the player option and all of these things, right? The general reaction was, whoa, the Lakers overpaid. I've been contending that what looks like an overpay today could very much be an underpay tomorrow. Let's say midseason, we're getting to a point where the general consensus starts to be, wow, okay, the Lakers actually got a deal here. What does that look like on the court? Like, what would we need to see out of Walker Kessler to change the perception of what the Lakers paid to get him?
I think from an averages standpoint, something like 13 to 15 points a game, 11, 12 rebounds, 2 to 2.5 blocks. Of course, it'd be great for all those numbers to be even higher, but I'm trying to keep it relatively realistic here. And I think the big thing would be the defensive rating when Kessler's on the floor, probably being around top 10 in the NBA. And if they can get to a point where with Kessler, they're a top 10 defense, but whenever Kessler's off the floor, realistically, they're going to be at best, maybe average-ish, but probably below that. That's where if he's having that type of impact of like, he's putting up monster numbers, better numbers than DA across the board, and is, you know, top five field goal percentage, top five rebounds, top five blocks, and also having this tangible impact on the Lakers defense where they're the 9th or 10th best defense with him on, and they're the 21st best defense with him off. That to me would be checking that box of he's having a real impact. He's got the production. He's got the actual on-court impact in terms of swinging the defense. That I think is something that's plausible and is, you know, what I'd be looking for next season. What about you?
Yeah, it's similar, and I would expect him to be in at least the All-Star conversation if that's where we're getting to there. Obviously, the Lakers' own wins will be part of that. I wouldn't know that I would necessarily expect him to make it.
Sure.
But yeah, maybe also in the Defensive Player of the Year conversation, just in those big national conversations, I'd expect to see his name popping up in those situations as well. But yes.
Well, we know Lakers don't win awards, so.
No, they do not. So I would not expect him to to win it. Even summer Lakers can't win awards. Even the Lakers summer league team, my God. But yeah, I would expect to see numbers along those lines for Walker Kessler. High efficiency. There are always going to be people looking to dunk on the Lakers when it comes to the media. There's going to be people that are not going to want to give him his due. But I think there would be a level where if he can get to a double-double a night guy, one of the leading shot blockers in the NBA, the Lakers' defensive numbers look great. And if the team is winning and winning a reasonable amount, that would go a long way towards getting people to say, oh, okay, wow, the Lakers really did get their long-term fit here at the center position. It's going to be a challenge for him, but it's also a challenge that I think he is up for. I think people are, because he didn't play much last season, I think people are forgetting how good defensively he really is. And I'm really excited to see what that looks like out there on the court. All right, let's go here, since we just talked a lot about Walker Kessler. Jonathan Kuminga, at what point does LA or should LA pivot off of Jonathan Kuminga? So Jovan, last night on my show, I said I'm at a point where if the Lakers get Jonathan Kuminga, fantastic. I'm excited. I'm excited for the athleticism. I want to see what he can do with Luka, and I'm hoping he's bought in to the role. And we've talked about that before, about how he needs to buy into a specific role in the Lakers. And if he doesn't, I'm almost going to breathe a sigh of relief and say, okay, well, I'm not going to lose any sleep over it. They're going to have to find somebody else, but another team will have to go into the season asking those questions about whether or not he's going to buy into the role, and is he going to worry about shot attempts and all of that. So I'm at a point where I'm going to be at peace with either outcome here in the Jonathan Kuminga situation, while acknowledging that even if they don't get him, they got to go get somebody else. Is there a drop dead point though? Is there a point where the Lakers just say, hey, you know, we're 2 days before training camp and you still haven't figured out life. What, you know, we're moving on at this point. At what point should the Lakers just end the pursuit of Jonathan Kuminga?
It's difficult to say. I would say, without knowing the entire picture here, my walkaway point would probably be right at the start of training camp. Mm-hmm. If you want to go down that road, because I think one of the things, or arguably the biggest thing holding it up, is this Kawhi trade. Actually, this has now had its own ripple effects of because Peyton Watson is ahead of Jonathan Kuminga in terms of the power forward, big wing hierarchy. So there are teams like Milwaukee, like the Clippers, that would be interested in Jonathan Kuminga, but they would prefer Peyton Watson if Peyton Watson is actually available. But Peyton Watson, that situation is being held up because Denver is lowballing him right now, and mm-hmm. they have no incentive to raise their offer because they control him because he's a restricted free agent. And the Clippers are one of the few teams that can make an aggressive pitch for Peyton Watson, but they don't know what their financial situation is going to be until the Kawhi situation is wrapped up. So this aspiration investigation, which has now gone on for almost a year, is holding up some business right now, because I think there will be a domino effect of, once the Kawhi trade goes through, assuming it does, then you will see the Clippers and or Bucks go after Peyton Watson. Denver will have to make their decision of what that entails, if they're willing to trade him or not. And then I think Jonathan Kuminga will be the next domino. If I'm advising Kuminga, I'm trying to wait this out and see if one of these teams gets desperate enough to make a more aggressive offer for him in a sign-in trade. But I get it from the teams pursuing him. Why, like, if you're the Lakers or the Cavs, you're like, we want to wrap this up soon here. Yeah. And if you're the Lakers, of course, you'd like to do that before the Slovenia trip. So I guess, if I've made my offer to him and I'm not budging off of that, and he just won't accept that and it's too low, I guess you could walk away sooner than later. But realistically, with the context of this might drag out for a while, in part because of Kawhi and Peyton Watson, I think once you're getting to the door of training camp, it's like, all right, we've made our offer. This is how we value you. This is how the market values you. If you don't accept that, then we're moving forward.
I think the Kawhi situation is probably more likely than not to, you know, still be going on past training camp. It sounds like if there's any kind of punishment that's levied towards the Clippers, Steve Ballmer's going to fight it, which means we're going to go to arbitration, and all this kind of craziness is going to occur. I think the only way this ends is if the NBA comes back and says, nope, you did nothing wrong, all is good. And then I think all hell breaks loose, and they're going to have to show their cards and explain how they came to that decision and why, because I think in the court of public opinion, the Clippers did something wrong. And again, whether or not the evidence suggests that, that's something we'll have to see. But it doesn't sound like this is getting wrapped up anytime soon. So perhaps push comes to shove right ahead of training camp, where the Lakers say, look, Kawhi's situation resolved or not. And I think a lot of teams would be in the spot, say, look, we need to move forward here into camp. But I also think if they're starting to get the sense from Jonathan Kuminga that all he's really concerned about is what his next salary is going to look like, more so than fit on team, more so than opportunity. If you're not 100% convinced that he's going to buy into the role that you want, if I'm the Lakers, I'm already moving on. I'm already trying to line up my other options, and they may not be as good as Jonathan Kuminga, so it may mean slow playing things a little bit. But if I'm the Lakers, I'm going to be hypersensitive to any sort of indication that he's not fully bought in, because you're going to have to give a long-term commitment here to him. We're talking a 3-year-plus deal in order to execute something in a sign-in trade, giving up whatever remaining assets that you have. I've got to be very convinced, if I'm the Lakers, that not only is he a guy for right now that can fill this role that they need, but he needs to be the guy for the future. And if there's any doubt starting to creep in, if this situation continuing to play out throws into question how motivated he is to actually be a Laker, I'm very willing to pivot and move on from that if I'm LA. I don't think we're there quite yet, but I think the Lakers need to be very careful with this situation with Jonathan Kuminga. I know there's a desperation amongst Lakers fans in order to fill this role and get the starting wing position figured out, but you also don't want to put yourself in a bad spot if this is not ultimately the right fit and you don't ultimately believe that he's willing to buy it. I think that's going to be the biggest factor in all of this.
I agree. And if we're judging it through the lens of, does this guy want to be in LA or does this guy want to embrace a certain role, it hasn't gotten off to the best start. Now, to be fair to him, I think the financial component is real. And like, I understand he and his agent fighting for as much money as possible. I think that is a player's right, is to demand as much money as you can get. I think the market has squeezed him a little bit here. So it does matter to some degree. You know, 13 million versus 17 million might not sound like a lot, but for them, that could matter in terms of also his future value, where in this league, like, I think one thing that gets overlooked when we talk about guys taking pay cuts or guys buyouts and stuff like that, once you have there is an element of like a dollar amount ascribed to a player. And if you are Jonathan Kuminga and you feel you're a $20 million, million dollar player, if you take a $12 million deal, well, now you're a $12 million player and you can play your way out of that, but you do kind of get put in a bucket of, okay, this is this guy's value, this is the market. And instead of potentially playing your way into a $30 million or $35 million player, now you're trying to make up ground to get back to being viewed as that $20, $25 million guy. So I think sometimes that is a factor here in terms of just once you accept a lower amount of money, and that's also, I think, why some guys don't like taking bench roles. Once you get pushed into a bench role, you're now a bench guy. And you really have to like push back against that and prove that you're way more than that to get back to being a starter. So that's where I do understand it from his perspective. I just also view it as there were several teams with cap space that could have invested in him. Like Chicago could have paid him to be their starting forward of the future next to Matas Bozelis or Caleb Wilson. They chose not to. Brooklyn had cap space. The Lakers had cap space. They could have paid him instead of Quentin Grimes or Mamu. They chose not to. So the market kind of spoke. We're at this stalemate deep in the beginning of August. And I think at some point that there's got to be an acceptance of the market and like, okay, let's take this challenge. Let's make the best of it. And then next contract will be the one where maybe he feels he's properly compensated or at least compensated at the level where he views himself.
What would be your level of confidence? Let's say that Jonathan Kuminga, I don't know, an hour from now, boom, Shams breaks the news, right? Jonathan Kuminga to the Lakers, 3 years, it's called $50 million, right? Three years, $50 million deal. Jonathan Kuminga to the Lakers. What would be your confidence that the Lakers have found their long-term fit on the wing next on the defensive side of the ball next to Luka on the wing?
I will say I don't think Kuminga, the best version of this team with Kuminga is not Kuminga being the primary wing defender. I think he's more the secondary guy in that starting group. So I would still eventually want, now maybe that's Quentin Grimes and he gets to back to defending at the 2023 level he defended at in New York. Or I think realistically it's moving Quentin Grimes to a bench role and replacing him with someone potentially next offseason with that non-taxpayer MLE, or maybe Cameron Carr ends up popping and he, I mean, I don't know if he could get to the Quentin Grimes level defensively, but just, I think eventually that there probably needs to be a replacement and Grimes is more of a bench guy. But for me, I think if it's defensive, I think it's an upgrade overall in terms of talent and skill with like what they currently have. But if we're saying like, is he replacing Matisse Thybulle or Zaire Williams or Jake in there? Like, I think those guys can defend. Matisse is in his own class, but like, is he that much of a better defender than Jake or Zaire? Is he even a better defender than those guys? I think they're all relatively in that like above average in terms of defensive metrics kind of range. And then I think offensively is where the big boost is. I think Kuminga, if he goes there or he comes to LA, that just takes their offense to a different level, where if you have him around Luka and Austin with Kessler as the screener, I just think that they have so much offensive firepower that if LA's ceiling was like top five offense, now it's top three or something like that. But for me, it's more so like the long-term fit of, I think they need that long-term starter and he would check that box. But confident wise, like I kind of confident, I don't know. Would you be confident right now in that situation?
I'm more confident than where they're at currently, but I also feel like it would be more of the same, in that the big question for me about Kuminga, there would be some familiarity in terms of the question mark on the mental side of things from a similar conversation to the ones that we had last year with DeAndre Ayton. But then in terms of his skills on the court, I look at Jake LaRavia, I look at Adu Thiro, Jared Vanderbilt, right? All these guys, Zaire Williams, all these guys have, there's differences between these players, but they all ultimately have the same big question. Can he shoot? And we would go into the season saying the same thing about Jonathan Kuminga. Can he shoot? Because frankly, if he could, he's still a Golden State Warrior right now. So is that going to take that next step forward? I think that I would feel much better because I think he's a better player than any of the guys that I just named. We're talking about, you know, LaRavian, Adu, and all that. He's better than those guys. But I think you'd have the same question mark going into the season from the position in terms of the offensive end. It's, can he shoot enough to punish teams that leave him out there? I think he would do a phenomenal job closing space as a second side attacker. I think about the situations where Rui was able to get the ball coming off of a driving kick from Luka and was able to capitalize on that and knock down those threes. And he was so phenomenal at that. Can he capitalize on that situation, or is he going to be very dependent upon just closing the space, getting into the paint, and then doing something really athletic when he gets there? So I would be more confident than I am right now. I'd feel that the entire roster would slot much better. I would be excited about getting Jonathan Kuminga, but I would still feel that same reservation about needing to know whether or not the shooting is going to get to at least league average level. And I think that's a concern now and wouldn't stop being a concern if they were to add Jonathan Kuminga.
Yeah. I think the shooting is actually my biggest concern with him. Is just, you look at the sample size, he's a low volume, low 30% 3-point shooter. So there's two elements of it. There's a volume component of him just getting the reps, and there's a actual shot making component in terms of his 3-point shooting. That's where, again, PJ Washington has his flaws. I understand why some people aren't high on the potential fit. But there is a notable gap there between the two in terms of percentage and volume. I'm not going to project out that PJ Washington's going to be a 32% 3-point shooter the rest of his career coming off this past season when he played with like no NBA level playmaking at the point guard spot. Right. Cooper Flagg, I think, really came on that second half of the year and can be that point forward type. But they had some of the worst point guard play in the league this past season in Dallas. And PJ, like the shot quality he would get as a Laker playing off of Luka and Austin, there's an astronomical difference between the shot quality he was getting in Dallas this past season. So I think that would solve itself. And he's not like an elite shooter. He's more of that 34 to 36% range. But that plus the volume is ahead of what Kuminga has provided up to this point in his career.
All right, let's go here to this one. Jalen Smith. Is the Caruso-like role player this roster needs? 94th percentile in rim defense, beast rebounder, no Kessler, no problem, opens up Mamu. I'm assuming Caruso-like in that energy defensive piece coming off of the bench. The issue could be that contract, trying to make some of the math work. Not that it's a bad contract, but just trying to get up to, off the top of my head, I think he's had a $9 million deal. That can be a little bit of a challenge for the Lakers to get there. In terms of the backup bigs that we've heard about, whether it's Makovich, whether it's Sims, I think there's an additional hurdle to clear just financially in order to go get a player like Jalen Smith. But what do you think about him as a potential target to be that big that the Lakers are looking to add? Somebody that would slot in between Kevon Looney and Walker Kessler as the nominal, you know, second tier big.
I think that's a position of need for this group. I will push back here a bit and say Caruso is one of the best bench players in the league and one of the most impactful defensive players in the league. So I think that's a very generous comparison for Jalen Smith. I think Jalen Smith, there are questions about, like, I don't think he's this locked in, clear cut backup center in a playoff context. I still have some questions about him that he would need to prove that he could play that role. So yeah. Caruso is like locked in 20 to 25 minutes a night in the playoffs, closing games. It's a very high bar. So I don't want that to distract from the larger point here of Jalen Smith is a good rim protector and he is a good rebounder and he is a stretch five, you know, a good stretch five. So like he checks those boxes of what you would want in terms of the backup role. And I would love him as an addition. I would like any of the additions that the Lakers have been linked to. I think the question with Smith compared to the other two is just, to your point, the price. You could get there with some combination of Hardy, Dalton, Jake, Vando technically could work in this scenario, but you could get there with one or two of those guys. I just, It is a lot to invest in the backup five spot, in my opinion. Like, I think it probably just financially longer term is going to be closer to a minimum level guy, but maybe Jalen Smith pops in that role. Maybe you restructure the contract in the future. And I would take it certainly over the status quo of potentially being in a situation where you only have Kevon Looney and Mamu in that case, at which point your collective foot speed and rim protection just isn't close to what you need. So I would take Jalen Smith. I would like that.
I certainly wouldn't say no to Jalen Smith. That's I just think the more pressing concern is the starting caliber wing. I prefer that they focus most of their attention and resources on solving that problem. I do think that the backup big piece things slot a little bit differently, where Mamu can spend more time at the backup five. If you do get that starting caliber wing, it's a little bit easier to eat into some of those minutes with Mamukelashvili than if you're relying on him to also play the four a bit more often, because you don't feel like you have that position necessarily covered. So I think you can kind of kill two birds with one stone to a degree just by getting that starting level wing that's going to play next to Luka. Whether we want to call Luka the three or the four defense, it doesn't really matter. You add that other starting level wing, and that's going to free up Mamu a bit more to play at the five. So you do sort of ease your concerns at that spot by adding the wing position. So to me, that's the priority. But I also think in an ideal world, the Lakers go into training camp with the roster they have right now, plus a starting level wing and another reserve five. And if it was Jalen Smith, I'd be thrilled with that. Mackovich, Sims, sure, we can make cases for all of those guys. But yeah, Jalen Smith, certainly an interesting target. I just wouldn't prioritize him over getting that starting level wing.
I agree. And there's also an element of the Lakers, like, low key have a crowded 4-5 room to some degree, right? Like, if we're projecting Mamu to play the four and the five, and you also want to get reps for a new Thero, and you're potentially adding this starting 4/3, and like Luka can play the four defensively. If he's gonna play with Sexton, like, technically Luka will be the point guard offensively, but Sexton will obviously be the point guard, and like Luka will be more of a, you know, a big wing. So I don't know. I'm curious to see how the rotation plays out, because it's been something I've been thinking about a lot of. Yeah. It really depends on who's that starter, and if it's someone coming in or if it's someone already on the roster, like, it's going to have a big swing in terms of the actual rotation and like who's playing.
100%. Yeah, I'm really curious to see how JJ Redick plays this, because we have our assumptions of how things are going to look. I can't wait to see them actually get on the floor. And unfortunately, we are like, what, 8 weeks away from that happening, actually a little bit more. But I can't wait to see him get out there on the floor and get a sense for what this is really going to look like when the team's out there and preseason kicks off. I believe it's October 5th. All right, we're going to get into some more of your questions, your comments in just a moment. First, quick shout out to our sponsor, and that is Prize Picks. You guys can check them out. Use the link in the description down below. The code, it's HMA. Play $5, get $150 if you win right now for new users. Great promo going on. This is a new deal with Prize Picks. Best time ever to go check out Prize Picks with this new deal. Again, play $5, get $150 in your lineups. If you win for new users, all you got to do is pick more or less on some of your favorite players. So I'm going Tariq Skubal, the new Dodger. Let's go. 5.5 strikeouts. I'm going to say he gets more than that. Welcome to LA. Debuting tonight, Sean Manea, more than 3.5 strikeouts as well. You guys want to get in on it. Again, use the link in the description down below and that code. It's HMA. You've been following this Dodger stuff?
No.
No, okay.
I'm aware of it. I'm an NBA guy. That's all. I'm not. And fantasy football. Those are my two things.
I've got like a couple leagues I need to activate. I am way behind in fantasy football. I don't know how I'm going to get ready for this season. But all this Dodger stuff, fascinating. The potential of a lockout and the Dodgers are ruining baseball and all that kind of stuff. I don't know enough about the way MLB operates to give it a concrete opinion on it, but I'll tell you this, the Dodgers can be a lot of fun, especially come playoff time, to watch. All right, let's go here. We got a potential trade or a hypothetical trade. Jake Vando and picks for DeAndre Hunter. You know, I've been asked variations of this for quite a while, and I don't see Sacramento moving off of Hunter. They went after him for a reason last year. I think they want to get him out there on the court this season, have a full year out there with him and go from there. So I get the Lakers need for a wing. I'd also question whether he's got the defensive chops. I'd say the answer is probably no to really fit the need that the Lakers have in terms of their starting lineup. But I also don't see Sacramento presently being ready to move on from him at this stage.
Yeah, I also don't really like DeAndre Hunter. I think he's a bit overrated. I think he's overrated defensively. To me, he's more of a four. We're getting into the weeds here, but I think the Lakers need a 4/3 or a 3/4, really a guy who can defend either wing spot, either forward spot. And I think Hunter is a bit more in that. Like, to me, he's better than Rui defensively, but he's kind of in a similar thing to Rui where you want him primarily on fours. He can switch and scale down onto some threes, but I wouldn't want that as his primary defensive assignment. And I want a guy, I feel good about that, taking on that responsibility as that starter. So that's where I think there's a major gap between him and Washington defensively, but the theoretical upside of Kuminga defensively, I would also take over Hunter. So some of the metrics, he rates out above average, he rates out well, but like just watching him, I feel like he's more of a four than a three. And I don't think he's like that wing stopper you throw out there to really hold down your defense. And really, I mean, most of the guys we're talking about aren't, but I think Washington is like the closest to that. And that's, again, why I view Washington at just like a different tier, honestly, maybe even two tiers ahead of Hunter.
Yeah, agreed for all the same reasons there. Jacket said, have we heard anything from JJ this offseason? See, master planning to take over the West. I don't know. He may be just locked in his basement diagramming plays right now. We saw him at Summer League. He showed up, a few games in Las Vegas, as he tends to do. I think he did that last year, too, where he came part of the way through Summer League.
He comes the second week.
Yeah. But no, not a lot from JJ Redick so far this summer. Actually, nothing at all since, I think, the end of the season in terms of public statements or anything of that nature.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious to see if he does like a podcast, maybe going into training camp. Remember before his first season, he did the low post with Zach Lowe.
Yeah.
And then I think he did one more other one before the season. I mean, he's not spoken, but I think one thing that has gone somewhat overlooked, in my opinion, with this roster and the switch that the Lakers have made is there's been a ton of focus, and understandably so, on Luka and what Luka wants and what fits best around Luka, which of course makes the most sense because he's the most important player. But there's also a ton of like JJ guys here. I think like Quentin Grimes is someone that JJ has had on his podcast. He's trained him before in a couple of off seasons, and just the dribble pass shoot nature to this roster, and also having, I think, that true rim protector in Walker Kessler, but also a guy who could potentially pick and pop, as we discussed earlier. There's a lot of JJ guys, in my opinion, on this roster. It's much more of a JJ roster than previously. We're going to see an increase in 3-point volume, theoretically. I think we're going to see the offense go to a different level. So while JJ is not publicly spoken, I think he spoke to a degree with the roster, with some of the changes. And this roster, to me, is far more geared to his proclivities.
I agree, 100%. Yeah, this is we had Rob Pelinka talking about getting younger, more depth, more athletic. We talk about players fitting with Luka, but it was JJ who said, I want more guys who can dribble, pass, shoot. And that was his end of the season press conference with Rob. And they've certainly gotten that. And that's part of the reason why I'm so high on this team offensively and why I think they can be such an offensive juggernaut this coming season, is because they have so many guys who, once they put a team in the blender, are going to be able to maintain that in terms of driving, making the right read, kicking out. Even certainly Mamu has the ability to do that. But then we also talk Colin Sexton. He just lives in the paint. Quentin Grimes, they're going to be able to have guys that are not Austin Reaves, guys that are not Luka Doncic, that can get into the paint, attack their man, beat him off the dribble, and then drive and make that kick and keep that defense scrambling. So I'm very high on this group offensively, and part of that is because of the addition of so many dribble pass shoot players on this Lakers roster. I often think back to January when the Lakers didn't have Austin Reaves for that spell, and then he came back, and like one of the first plays he made was this little burst to the rim where he got to the rim quick, and it was like, oh yeah, they've been missing that. We'd seen the team play for a few weeks at that point, And they just didn't have that other guy that wasn't LeBron James that could really have any kind of burst getting to the basket. And they had missed that. So I think having multiple players with that type of skill set is going to be very, very valuable. And I think JJ Redick is certainly going to lean into that this season. Let's go here. Any thoughts on the PJ trade talk? We kind of just talked about PJ Washington. PJ trade talk making its rounds. You know, we talk about what's out there, Jovan. We talk about what rumors are out there, but then we also talk about actions. And we look at action-wise what the Dallas Mavericks have done. They've really loaded up on the wing position. When you look at acquiring Zachary Sache, the Najee Marshall extension, they're really leaning into the wing spot. And I think that has only fueled this idea that PJ Washington, potentially Daniel Gafford, maybe a little bit different conversation, but with the addition of Morris Johnson, that these guys could ultimately be on the way out from Dallas. But that brings us right back to, even if PJ Washington is available, will the Mavs trade players to the Lakers? I think that is still very much an unknown. I love the target of PJ Washington. I think it makes sense for the Mavs to be listening to offers for him. But, Jovan, we don't know if the Mavs would actually complete a trade with the Lakers that would involve the Lakers getting pieces that they need in order to make Luka happy.
It's a fair point. And I know there's a ton of Mavericks fans that want, I think they now have their version of the Project 2028. Yep. or whatever to bring back Luka. So if Dallas helps the Lakers win with Luka, that inevitably makes it less likely that he will go back to Dallas, right? So I could understand why Dallas fans wouldn't want that and why they would react negatively to a potential trade with the Lakers. But to your point, actions speak louder than words. And with drafting Morris Johnson Jr., with trading for Santi Aldama and trading for Zachary Risache and also extending Najee Marshall, Marshall is still trade eligible despite the extension. Just based on the percentage that they increased his contract. Still, it's like you also have Cooper Flagg in there. You also have Derek Lively in there. I don't think Daniel Gafford is a long-term piece for them. But across Flagg, Lively, Johnson, Risache, Aldama, and Marshall, you have more than enough front court minutes, 3 through 5. So the odd man out seemed to be like longer term PJ Washington and Daniel Gafford. They were already rumored to be shopping them earlier in the offseason. So I think it makes a ton of sense that PJ Washington would be gettable. Now, what's the price? They've been looking for a first. They've not been able to get that. And then are they willing to play ball with the Lakers? And that just remains to be seen. I think if they win the trade on paper, which to me would probably be at least the pick swap in 2 seconds, if not all four of LA's tradable draft assets, that probably wins the trade on paper for Dallas from the analytics bros who will look at the outgoing value with PJ's contract and then look at the picks they're getting. Like, they'll win the trade optically maybe that way, and then that's a way that Dallas can do it. But I don't know. I think it would be like he to me is the perfect fit, or not the perfect fit, but the most realistic, like, best case scenario for LA just based on what they need. I think he checks the most boxes of what they need from that starting wing spot.
I have more confidence in what he is than, say, Jonathan Kuminga and what he can be with Luka, in part because we've already seen it. But I do question whether or not the Mavs will trade with the Lakers just because of that 2028 situation. They'd like to get it back. Plus, do you really want to get involved in a trade with the, I mean, I know technically they traded with the Lakers on draft night, but this involves actual, real players going out. It's a different regime in Dallas, but I still wonder what the optics would be like with the Mavs. Now, I also think part of it would be, if we're talking about draft capital going to the Mavs, where it's that pick swap, second round picks, I think it would also be not Jared Vanderbilt being involved in the deal would be important from the Mavs side of things, from a value perspective. That is, and from the Lakers side of things, particularly if we're looking at trying to maintain the ability to use that non-taxpayer, Jared Vanderbilt being involved in the trade would certainly be helpful. We look at their options for next summer to be able to add kind of like a final piece to this roster. So that could be a potential sticking point in a deal as well. There may be pathways to get there. It just depends on what salaries go out and everything, but that would be something to keep an eye on too. If is Jared Vanderbilt in the deal or not? If he is, that's value to the Lakers. If he's not, that would be more valuable for the Dallas Mavericks. But what's the gap between, for you, what's the gap between PJ Washington and Jonathan Kuminga? Like, if you're willing to give up X for Kuminga and Y for PJ Washington, what's the difference in value there?
I would say, to keep it tangible, I would give up 2 seconds for Kuminga and I would empty the clip for PJ Washington. So okay. I guess I view it as an extra second and a pick swap. I would not give up a pick swap for Kuminga. I think with the Lakers' limited draft assets, that is a step too far, and I need to have a certain element of certainty. And look, I get PJ Washington. Some of the health stuff is concerning. The shooting is concerning, though. Again, I would argue that he has high level reps as an off ball player and shooter next to Luka and on a team that made the finals. And so I think there's a notable gap and a bigger gap than their percentage difference might indicate in terms of their off ball utility and like off ball role with what the Lakers need as like that second side player, that, you know, corner shooter. I think he could fit in seamlessly there. But he's a better rebounder than Kuminga. He's a better defender than Kuminga. I think there's a higher level of self-awareness and role acceptance with him. So really, like, I think the clear thing that Kuminga has over him, he's like a superior athlete to him, and he's got the bag. He's got the, okay, he can operate in the mid-range. He can attack off the dribble, get to the rim, dunk on someone's head, draw a foul. But how valuable is that in the context of what the Lakers are going to need from that role? And how valuable is that compared to all the other things that Washington does at a higher level than Kuminga? Like, I just think Washington is a more well-rounded player, and he's not perfect. And everyone who doesn't want him or nitpicks, whatever, I totally understand all of the criticisms with him. I just implore you to look at the alternatives right now. Like, think about the gap between PJ Washington and Jake LaRavia, or PJ Washington and Zaire Williams, PJ Washington, Matisse Thybulle, PJ Washington and Mamu as like a wing defender. That's a massive gap between those two in that specific context. That's where I'm like, okay, well, if you don't get the PJ Washington, there's a massive opportunity cost there. And I think you need the PJ Washington and the non-taxpayer MLE guy next summer. It's not an either or, you can do both. So I think there's a gap between the two. Now, Kuminga, his ceiling is incredible. There's a version of Kuminga where if he really buys in and develops as an off-ball shooter, sure, like, his ceiling is higher than Washington's. I'm not going to deny that. But we've only seen it in flashes, and we've more so seen him kind of push back against that player archetype and be more of like, I want the ball, I want to do certain things. And even going back to this past postseason, like, he did, I think, defend better than people gave him credit for, but he was averaging 3 rebounds per game. And it's just like, you need, like, I mean, that's like worse than Rui, that, you know, that's like not high enough from a wing slash forward. So I would I still have my questions with him of just, can he be a dirty work little things guy? And with Washington, I think he can.
Yeah. Again, more certainty with PJ Washington. We know what he is and what he can be, especially we've already seen him play with Luka. Obi Toppin or Aaron Nesmith, perhaps. Yeah, I mean, I would love to get Aaron Nesmith, but I don't see that as being particularly likely with Indiana. And Obi Toppin, probably the same. I don't know that he's how available he is, if they're ready to make that kind of a move. I think Indiana's in a spot where they're going to want to go into the season, see what they've got with their big addition in Ivica Zubac, getting Halliburton back in and healthy before they go make anything else, do anything else that's going to be particularly dramatic for their roster. So I love those targets potentially for the Lakers, obviously depending on the cost. Especially love Aaron Nesmith as a potential target, but I'd be very surprised if the Lakers were able to acquire him.
Agreed. I would much prefer Nesmith. I think Toppin's a bench player, not a starter.
Yeah. Thoughts on the reports saying no one is offering Watson more than 16 to 18. Could the Lakers offer 20 plus and he help push for the Lakers? You know, I keep coming back to this, Yovan, when I look at the NBA summer and kind of what's gone on, I look at what the Oklahoma City Thunder have done and their efforts to shed salary and the way they've sent those players to the Eastern Conference, whether it's Aaron Wiggins, Isaiah Joe, now Lou Dort, obviously 2 deals with the Hawks and 1 with the Pistons. I look at that as something that would loom large in any kind of Peyton Watson sign and trade. Like, if I'm Denver, I really don't want to send him to the Lakers. If I have an opportunity to sign and trade him now, obviously if the Lakers are willing to offer more than other teams are, and certainly what Peyton Watson wants, that could matter in this situation too. But I would imagine that if the Denver Nuggets have an option that is not the Lakers, maybe save for the Wolves, they would probably rather send him just about anywhere else in the NBA if they can avoid it. And perhaps, you know, now given the situation with Spencer Jones, maybe the Thunder, we can add them into that group as well. But I would assume that it would be difficult for the Lakers to work out a deal with Denver that would land Peyton Watson. You never say never in the NBA, but if I'm the Denver Nuggets, kind of similar to the Mavs, where I would very much need to win the trade with the Lakers, especially given what the Lakers just gave up to get Walker Kessler. That said, the Nuggets, they really do seem to be in a tough spot here with Peyton Watson. Where are you at on the Lakers potentially going after him? I have it as very, very, very low probability.
I would agree. I might even go lower. Now, them going after him is one thing altogether, right? But them actually being able to land him, yes, I think is highly unlikely. At least this summer, maybe he takes the qualifying offer and next summer is out there. I think the non-taxpayer MLE is below his market value in terms of him being an unrestricted free agent. So I don't think he would accept that. But maybe you can figure out a way to sign and trade with Denver at that point. But to your point, like, for a sign and trade to go through, you need two things to happen. You need the player to sign off on the contract, and you need the team that you're trading with to, you know, to agree to the terms. So to your point, I don't see Denver agreeing to trade with the Lakers. I think that's a non-starter. I actually think Dallas is more likely to trade with the Lakers than Denver, unless it's like dumping Christian Brown or something, but actually like helping the Lakers and giving them a valuable player. I do not see Denver playing ball there. But two, Peyton Watson is reportedly looking for a contract as high, if not higher, than Christian Brown's 25 plus AAV. So if you're starting out at 25, the Lakers, just a salary match there, would have to get to at least roughly 18 to stay under the first apron where they're hard capped. So to fit in Peyton Watson at, let's just say, 5-year, $125 million deal, or four, or I guess they couldn't do five, but a 4-year, $100 million deal roughly, mm-hmm, or even 4-year, like 90, you're going to have to be sending out somewhere in the high teens in terms of money. And maybe there's a version where it's like Jake Dalton, Jaden Hardy, if you're the Nuggets, all those guys are expirings. So you don't have like the long-term cost of like a Vando, but is that package plus you're going to have to give up all the draft capital. You know, if I'm Denver, I'm not accepting anything under all four right draft assets. Can no one else top that offer? Like, I think the Clippers could top that offer theoretically. I think the Bucks could top that offer theoretically. I think there are teams that have either more draft assets or better young talent that they would be offering in a Peyton Watson sign-in trade. So it would be great. Like, don't get me wrong, I would love Peyton Watson. He was my number two target behind Kessler. I just think it's really unlikely.
Yeah. I would love that they go after him. I would assume they're making the phone call at least and having the conversation, but would be shocked if they could actually get him. I know people are looking around the NBA saying, well, you know, he's still sitting out there, and if he's not somewhere, maybe the Lakers can get in on that situation. I understand why. I just have it very, very unlikely that they can actually do it and get the assets over to Denver. I mean, but the reporting right now is that the Nuggets don't even have a single first-round pick on the table. But nonetheless, that doesn't make it more likely, I think, that they're going to want to send him to the Lakers. And keep in mind, Denver, they are in the driver's seat with this situation. They can a sign and trade is something the Denver Nuggets have to participate in. And Peyton Watson is restricted. So even if the Lakers came in with an offer, and they don't have money to offer in free agency, but hypothetically, if they had money and they came in with an offer, Denver could still match that. So they are very much in control of where he ultimately lands in situations like this with the restricted free agency. So I don't see it as very likely, but hey, leave no stone unturned. If I'm Rob Pelinka, I'm absolutely making that call, because I'll tell you what, out of all the guys we've talked about, PJ Washington, Jonathan Kuminga, I mean, even throw Klay Thompson into the mix, right? For some reason, his name was bouncing around a little bit yesterday, day before. I would feel most confident, most excited about Peyton Watson joining the Lakers. But I just don't see it as particularly realistic. I wouldn't be holding my breath for that one.
To that question, you'd probably have to put Adu in. If you're not putting Cameron Carr on the table, yeah, I think you have to put Adu plus the draft capital, and maybe that gets them interested. But I mean, I think he's their fourth best player and probably the third guy I would want longer term behind Jokic and Murray, just with Aaron Gordon's injury history. So if I'm Denver, that's my last resort, is losing Peyton Watson. Like, that's the guy I'm trying to keep over Johnson and Brown and potentially even over Gordon. And I love Aaron Gordon. I think he is one of the most underrated players in the league. And even last year with Aaron Gordon, they were a really good team when he was available. It's just, we don't know if he's going to be available or how frequently he'll be available.
If that was on the table, if it's a do plus all the picks and the non-Vando salaries to match, you would do it?
Yes.
Yeah, I would do it as well.
I think Peyton Watson's that good. Let's quickly, can we talk Clay? We didn't talk Clay today.
Yeah, we didn't talk Clay.
We do have rumor it here.
That he wants LA. Does LA want Clay?
That's the part of this that has not been mentioned in the reporting. So if he's a minimum guy, would I rather have Clay Thompson than Dalton Connect? Sure. Would I rather have Clay Thompson than Jaden Hardy? Sure. So if you're clearing out some roster spots and you bring him on, now you could argue, like, are you better served longer term adding Arthur Kaluma or Chris Mannion on like a 3 or 4 year deal and a cost controlled team friendly deal at like the minimum or even below that? That is probably the better long term play. But I like Clay. I mean, there's a real shooting component here where he would be the Lakers' best shooter, and he's still shooting. I think this past year is like 39% on over 7 attempts per game. So it's not just the percentage. It's like he gets them up. He's a high volume guy. He previously went to Dallas to play with Luka. He's in Southern California native. His dad's obviously Michael Thompson. So there's like a homecoming element here. He spends the summers in LA, in Orange County. I get the narrative of it, but in terms of actual fit, he's not the defender that the Lakers need from that spot. So like, I wouldn't view him as a starter. I'd view him as a bench guy. And then there's a whole other conversation of like, are you playing him at the expense of Adu or Cameron Carr or Zaire? Like these guys who could be long-term pieces. I don't know.
He would be 6-ish years older than the next player on the roster. I think there's merit to Klay Thompson as a basketball player, no question. He's not what he was, obviously, but there's merits, there. He and Luka were like plus 12 per 100 when they were together in Dallas, which is great. But I look at what the Lakers have done. Again, actions, right? Look what the Lakers have done this summer. There's a reason why there was a period of time where Austin Reeves was the oldest player on the team, and now it's Kevon Looney, and he's just turned 30. They are very clearly leaning into younger players. It would be a complete course reversal for the Lakers to then go after Klay Thompson. I think the ship sailed. He had opportunities to become a Laker. He went to go play with Luka. Ironically, he should have come to the Lakers if he wanted to play with Luka. But I just don't see him being the right fit long term. Like you said, if the cost was minimal, if you told me he's replacing Dalton Connect, of course, yeah, absolutely. But why not, right? Why wouldn't you do that? But if you're giving up any kind of significant assets, I don't think you're getting any closer to checking the box of that starting level wing that you need. And so I wouldn't be in favor of that. If it means giving up players that you really want to keep, if it means giving up your remaining draft assets that you really need in order to get that starting level wing, then I'm not doing that. My read on it was just that this was, I don't know that this was like leaked information or anything like that. Just trying to read between the lines though. If you're Dallas and you've heard the Clay buyout rumors and Miami is waiting for Clay to get bought out, it doesn't hurt if there's word out there that other teams are interested in Clay as well, right? Like that, hey, Miami, you'd better give us something for him, because even if he gets bought out, not a guarantee you're getting him. Way better chances you can get him if you actually trade something for him. Just saying, I don't think it makes a lot of sense for the Lakers to be significantly interested in Klay Thompson. If he got bought out and it's a minimum deal or something, and he really wants to come to LA, sure. But I look at this information as being more geared towards getting somebody, whether it's Miami or otherwise, to give up something in a trade for Klay rather than it be, an actual, like, hey, Klay to the Lakers is a real thing.
I wouldn't trade for him. And I would also say that we're talking about the Lakers having these two clear needs right now of this starting I label it more as a starting wing than a starting four, but that's defensive starter who could defend at least threes and fours, if not ideally like two through four, two through five. Klay Thompson is not that player. Mm-hmm. Then we also talk about them needing a backup five. He's not that player either. So this would almost be filling a different need where, again, if it's just as simple as like, can you find a way to swap out Dalton Connect? I mean, you already have to waive someone, so that's its own conversation, but like, you have to get off, if it's getting off of a Hardy or Connect and it's just more of a talent play, like, sure. If I had to throw a guy in tomorrow to help me win a basketball game, I think Klay Thompson is still a better player than either one of those guys and could help more. But there's an opportunity cost here of someone's going to lose minutes, and it's Matisse or Zaire or Adu or Cameron Carr or someone like that. And there's a development component, or at least in Matisse's argument, like a defensive component where you do lose something there. And I just don't know that he is still the level of player to like offset the potential development of some of the Lakers' younger guys, or like to offset some guys that are going to help the perimeter defense, which the Lakers really need. So I guess from like a pure talent perspective, a pedigree perspective, I understand it. The Lakers have previously had interest in him, but I would not trade for him. And at best, it would be a minimum signing, like post adding that starter and adding a backup five.
I would trade for him if Vando was going out.
Sure. That's the exception, but I don't.
That's the exception. Otherwise,
I don't see that happening.
I would not trade for him. All right, everybody. We appreciate all of you joining us here today on the show. We'll be back on Thursday talking more Lakers basketball. Hopefully we'll see you then. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Till next time, everybody. See you and stay safe.